Fisheries Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 5:03 p.m. on Thursday, March 1st, 2012. Present with us, we have Representative Osterman, Representative Herron, Representative Kawasaki, Representative Miller, and myself, Chair Thompson. Before we start, please turn off your cell phones. Just turning them to vibrate in this room doesn't work. It still interferes with the recording system. Today's agenda is House Concurrent Resolution 25, Wildlife and Sport Fish Restoration Program, sponsored by Representative Newman, and House Bill 332, Chinook Research and Restoration Endowment by Representative Herron. Here today to present House Concurrent Resolution 25 is Representative Newman and his staff, Rex Shattuck. Representative Newman, Mr. Shattuck, please come to the table, put yourselves on the record, and introduce HCR 25 to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Representative Mark Newman. I represent the House District 15 in the beautiful Susitna River Valley. Today, we're going to be working on House Concurrent Resolution, which is the Wildlife and Sport Fish Restoration Program, a short title. So, Mr. Chairman and members, thank you for hearing House Concurrent Resolution 25. This resolution commemorates 75 years of wildlife conservation and recognizing sportsmen, industry, and state and federal agencies that have acted to preserve our heritage. Hunters and anglers were our earliest conservationists. They saw the rapid decline of many species due to unregulated market hunting, commerce involving wildlife, and habitat loss as early as the 1800s. Bonding together with leaders like Roosevelt, Leopold, and Muir, they ensured sustainable wildlife resources for future generations. 75 years ago, wildlife restoration was started through the Pittman-Robertson Act of 1937, also known as the Federal Aid in Wildlife Restoration Act. It established funding for restoration of wildlife and the acquisition, development, and management of habitats. It was amended in 1970 to provide funding for hunter training programs and the development, operation, and maintenance of public shooting ranges. In 1950, the Dingell-Johnson Act was passed creating sport fishing restoration programs, also known as the Federal Aid in Sport Fishing Restoration Act. It created funding by an federal excise tax on fishing gear and motorboat fuels to provide grant money for fishery conservation, boating access, and aquatic education. Mr. Chairman, members, it's these acts and others throughout the states that were instrumental in establishing our very effective user pay, user benefit system. So much so that in 1939, contributions to state fish and wildlife agencies by wildlife and sport fish restoration programs have exceeded $13 billion. Thanks to these legacy programs, we are successfully working to restore fish and wildlife populations around this state and this country. It's a legacy that hunters, anglers, and outdoor industries, state and federal natural resource agencies started some 75 years ago and has been a model of conservation unique to the rest of the world. It is my hope that the Alaska State Legislature, on the 75th anniversary of the nation's greatest conservation story, recognizes the leading roles that hunters, anglers, boaters, recreational shooters, and industry, and state and federal wildlife agencies all have played in restoring healthy populations of fish and wildlife and other natural resources by passing this resolution. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I believe we have some others that can talk here from the department to explain how much money comes into the state and how that money is distributed.
I think I have a note that Vice Chair Johnson and Representative Pruitt have joined us during that presentation. Committee members, any questions of the sponsor, Representative Newman? Seeing none, do we have a list of who's here? Not everybody signed up? Well, we will just call up the people in the room that would like to testify to HCR 25. Mr. Chair, do you want to bring up your...
Mr. Chair, I was told that the department has some folks online that can explain how this works, or else maybe they have some members in the audience here that can help.
You bet. We've got a list coming.
And Mr. Chair, this is also a movement on recognizing the 75th anniversary that is moving across the states and recognizing what sportsmen as true conservationists do for America and making sure that we have these programs funded.
Thank you, Representative Newman. Online we have Lisa Evans from the Department of Fish and Game in Anchorage. Lisa, are you online?
I am. Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Yes, place yourself on the record and your affiliation, and we'll hear your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Lisa Evans, and I'm the Assistant Director for the Sport Fish Division with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. On behalf of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, I would like to thank Representative Newman and the members of this committee for acknowledging the 75th anniversary of the most successful fish and wildlife restoration and management program in the world. This is a one-of-a-kind user-pay, user-benefit system that has allowed the Alaska Department of Fish and Game to actively manage our state's abundant fish and wildlife resources in a manner that ensures opportunities for the hunters and anglers of both today and tomorrow. Since 1942, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game has received nearly $666 million through the Wildlife and Sport Fish Restoration Programs. When we combine these funds with annual hunting and fishing license revenues, it represents a substantial portion of our annual operating budget, and these funds are essential to our successful management, research, education, and public access of our resources. A couple of examples in how we've used these funds, if you don't mind, I could provide. The first is in Whittier. We had a marked increase in recreational boater use and angler effort from the completion of the road project in 2000. And Whittier is the only natural ice-free deep water port in South Central Alaska and is closest to Anchorage. It provides the closest access to Prince William Sound, which contains Chugach National Forest, numerous state marine parks, public use recreational cabins, and a variety of sport angling and other recreational opportunities. Prince William Sound is a primary recreational boating and sport angling destination for the residents of Anchorage, the Mat-Su Valley, Kenai Peninsula cities of Seward, Soldotna, Kenai, and Homer. Both sport fish restoration and angler license dollars were used to rehabilitate and improve the 25-year-old boat launch ramp facilities at Whittier by replacing them with two lane dilapidated launch ramps and a mooring dock with brand new facilities. This is a very heavily used boat access facility, and it's just one way in which we can use our sport fish restoration dollars. Turning to the wildlife side, we have spent a significant amount of our wildlife restoration dollars on monitoring the population status of the Western Arctic caribou herd. We've used these funds along with hunters' license dollars to measure the population size and trends. We've measured calf production and survival, adult mortality, proportion of bulls, cows, and calves in the herd, the health and body condition of caribou to understand their population dynamics and effectively manage them, and assess the safety of their meat for human consumption. And as I'm sure you know, this is a very important wildlife resource for the citizens of Alaska in terms of putting food on their table. A final example that I would like to provide is actually combines both wildlife and sport fish restoration dollars, and we leverage those funds with private donations and volunteer efforts to sponsor some very well-known and popular hunter and angler education programs throughout the state. These programs are known as Becoming an Outdoor Woman, Hunter Education, Outdoor Youth Days, and Alaska Conservation Camp. These skills-oriented programs are introducing participants to Alaskans' hunting and fishing opportunities and are extremely effective tools for recruiting and retaining hunters and anglers in Alaska. And by recruiting and retaining hunters and anglers, we can ensure that this user-pay, user-benefit model is successful for 75 more years. The bottom line for me is that the Wildlife and Sport Fish Restoration Program is an American legacy. It was fought for by sportsmen, and it's beneficial to everyone. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game is grateful to the sportsmen and women who purchase annual Alaska hunting and fishing licenses, as well as the hunting, fishing, shooting, and boating industries for their role in providing funding to ensure that current and future generations will continue to enjoy Alaska's abundant fish and wildlife resources. Mr. Chair, we very much appreciate this committee and Representative Newman for acknowledging the contributions of our sportsmen and women, as well as the industry, through HCR 25. And with that, I'll entertain any questions.
Does the committee have any questions of Ms. Evans? Seeing none, we sure do appreciate your testimony, Ms. Evans. Next online, we have Doug Vincent Lang. I have down that he is here to answer questions. Mr. Vincent Lang, do you have any testimony you wish to offer?
Well, I can't add very much more to what Ms. Evans said, so, Mr. Chair, I'll leave the rest of what she said. Thank you, Doug.
Okay, thank you for being online. Stay there in case somebody does come up with some questions.
Okay.
That's all I have on the line. Is anybody else in the room like to come forward and testify to HCR 25? Seeing none, then we're back to the committee. Does the committee have any other questions or responses? Representative Newman. Representative Johnson. Vice Chair Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Newman, thank you so much for bringing this forward. It is a priority of the National Association of Sportsmen's Caucuses, and I was just wondering if it would be appropriate for us to put a copy, send a copy to that organization, as well as the Lisa Murkowski, Don Young, and members of the Alaska delegation, if that would be an appropriate amendment at this point.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair, or through the Chair, Representative Johnson, I think that would be appropriate. In fact, just this morning I talked to our National Assembly Sportsman's Caucus President, Mike Pitts, who's also filing this bill in South Carolina, along with other sportsmen. And I know that Ms. Evans has mentioned my name on this several times. But it's not me. It's all of us as conservationists and sportsmen, you know, who need to be recognized, not me. I'm just a guy who's carrying this bill, but it's all of us as conservationists that need to be recognized on this, not just me.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Vice Chair Johnson, did you want to make a conceptual amendment to add the mail to list of sporting ad organizations?
Yes, if I could add, I would like to add a couple, actually, SCI Alaska. With the sponsor's permission. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd move that we add to the list of correspondence the National Associated Sportsmen's Caucuses and SCI Alaska.
Is there any objection? Hearing none, we'll so accept that conceptual amendment. Further discussion by the committee? Seeing none.
Mr. Chairman, I would move House Concurrent Resolution Number 25 out of committee. With individual recommendations and zero fiscal note, I believe
and
it through as one.
Conceptual amendment.
And as amended. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there any objections? Seeing none, we have forwarded House Concurrent Resolution 25 from committee, and we'll take a brief at ease while we sign the document. On the record. Next up tonight is House Bill 332, Chinook Research and Restoration Endowment by Representative Herron. We have a CS before us tonight. Rep. Johnson, can you make a motion to bring the CS for HB 332 before the committee for discussion purposes?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move the CS for House Bill Number 332, designated 27LS1395/M.
And I'll object for discussion purposes, so we will be addressing, talking about version M. All right, Representative Herron, please place yourself on the record, and we'll hear your introduction of House Bill 332.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Bob Herron, Representative House District 38. House Bill 332, Alaska Chinook Salmon Research and Restoration Endowment Fund. Now, this legislation creates this research and restoration fund in the Department of Revenue, and any grants from that fund will be issued to only qualifying organizations. I'm speaking to the choir here, of course, but Chinook is the state fish of Alaska. It's an important staple for all Alaskans. It's economically important species for a number of commercial fisheries. It is, you know, obviously, go in the next room, it's a prized sports fishery resource. And Chinook is a trend fishery. It is you could call it the canary. It's the first to decline, and then the other species will follow. So legislation has been introduced that maybe we can fix, maybe we can research and maybe potentially fix it. So obviously, Mr. Chairman, Chinook salmon populations in Alaska have undergone significant shifts in the last 40 years, but not enough is known about the factors influencing these shifts. 8 of the 14 currently listed stocks of concern are Chinook salmon stocks. And Yukon Chinooks has been in the news, and it's been particularly hit hard. So these harvest data information has shown significant declines over the last 15 years, and there's been hardship and anxiety in fishery-dependent communities throughout Alaska. So probably in testimony, I'm hoping in testimony, that there will be others that will comment that most of our major Chinook stocks, salmon Chinook stocks, are in a decline. Mr. Chairman, you know, it establishes a fund in the Department of Revenue. We'd like to fund, the legislature would love to be at least 5% real rate of return. It's not a dedicated fund. And this legislation would also establish a grant account in the general fund. The commissioner would identify what's available for appropriation, and then the legislature would decide what to appropriate to the grant account from the fund. The grant account would be used for grants for research, restoration for Chinook salmon, reimbursement to the Department of Revenue and Commerce for costs associated with the fund, and matching funds with hopefully significant private and federal grants. The board administering the grant fund is established in Commerce. All members are appointed by the governor, and the members would be the Commissioner of Fish and Game and residents from the six regions across the state with experience, Mr. Chairman, harvesting Chinook. The board would, their rules would be outlined in the legislation. Mr. Chairman, this legislation would create a stable, long-term source of funding to support high-quality interdisciplinary research. With this legislation, hopefully Alaska and its residents can increase its understanding of Chinook salmon and how to best target remediation efforts to restore this vital resource. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Questions from the committee members for Representative Herron, the bill sponsor. Representative Osterman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two questions. First off, stocks of concern, will they have a priority over other research or restoration projects? Or should they?
Well, I think that's maybe a we can ask others that question, but I believe that it should be a decision in concert with others and the board to make that determination of what's best for the research and restoration projects.
Follow-up question, Representative Osterman.
Thank you. On page 6 of the bill, rather, on line 15, and it's one of the, and we're talking about the review of the grants. When reviewing the grants, the board shall give weight to the following factors. And on line 15, whether the applicant has an experience in administering research and restoration projects. Do you have to have the experience in both research and restoration? Because there's going to be, it seems to me there'd be a number of restoration projects out there that have already been researched and are ready to go, and maybe somebody that does restoration projects would be, don't want to disqualify them.
I think that's a good point. Mr. Chairman, I think that's a good point, and after testimony, maybe we can figure that out.
All right. Further questions from the committee, from the spot for the sponsor, Representative Herron. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Mr. Chairman. I haven't read this very closely yet, and you'll have to forgive me if the answer is already apparent in here. But would this research, would this money, would these efforts to restore be confined only to that particular species of salmon, or will there be overlaps of other animals also involved in the study and hopefully restoration?
It's my understanding that this is to target Chinook, and but I would defer that maybe others could more clearly define it.
We have quite a few people in the room and online that are wanting to testify, and we might have some of those that could answer that question for you.
All right.
Further questions by the committee? Seeing none, then we'll go to public testimony. In the room, we have some that are here for answering questions. If anybody needs to bring them forward, it would be Eric Volk from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. He's a fish scientist. We have Ed Jones from Alaska Department of Fish and Game and Bob Clark, Alaska Department of Fish and Game, and they're here to answer questions. Wanting to testify is Karen Ellis. Ellis, okay. Please come forward, place your self on the record and your affiliation, and I apologize for not getting your last name correct. No. Go right ahead.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to testify tonight on HB 332 in front of you. I'm Karen Gillis with Barings. I'm the executive director at Bering Sea Fishermen's Association. Our organization has been very active in research and restoration activities within the Arctic, Yukon, Kuskokwim regions of the state for many years, including Bristol Bay in the early 90s. And I know you have a packet in front of you that includes quite a bit of information, justification for the background of this bill. So I won't dive into the problems that you're seeing around the state. However, I will share with you, this is a statewide graph of Alaska Chinook harvest from 1961 to 2009 that indicates pretty clearly that we're in this trend here. It's not a pretty sight at the moment. But why is research and restoration so important, and why do so much of it? It's increasingly important as fish populations decline. The decline of many fish species has an immense impact on ocean ecosystems, as well as a significant impact on our primary food, on a primary food source. Research and restoration projects help policymakers determine what course of action to take in order to maintain fish populations, and national and international policies are determined based on the data provided by fish research and restoration projects. Establishing a program to effectively address the causes of the declines of Chinook salmon will require multidisciplinary research, as Representative Heron mentioned, across the full salmon life cycle, which does not mean spending a few years looking at Chinook salmon. It means spending multiple years of time and money looking at these species. As I mentioned, we've been involved in research, and I want to highlight a couple of the things that we have seen accomplished or moving forward with the money that has been received by our programs under efforts that we've worked on. In the past 10 years, the Arctic Yukon Kuskokwim Sustainable Salmon Initiative has spent a total of $22 million and has funded a number of important research projects aimed at gaining an understanding of the causes of the variability of salmon and supporting the development of improved fisheries management tools. As a side note, the full $22 million was provided to look at all five Pacific salmon species, not just Chinook. So we have not spent $22 million on Chinook salmon research or restoration projects. So I've got a couple of projects that I want to highlight for you. The first is titled Developing a Research Action Plan for AYK Region Chinook Salmon. The purpose of this project, which is still underway, is to identify which variables and processes are the most likely causative factors of recent declines, and to produce a detailed set of research priorities and questions targeting the key drivers of Chinook salmon abundance. An expert panel is working to identify research questions, hypotheses, and draft example summaries of proposed research to guide future research efforts. The next project is escapement goal setting to ensure sustainable fisheries. When this project is completed, our expert panel will offer advice on the most appropriate management efforts. The panel will have considered a broad range of approaches and analytical frameworks, such as what are the best methods for dealing with data-limited situations, what methods exist for determining escapement goals which are best used to in different drainage systems, and what is the best model for establishing escapement goals in subsistence-dominated fisheries. They will also develop techniques to incorporate uncertainty and risk into management evaluation and disseminate results among fishery managers, researchers, and policymakers. Some of the changes in salmon production result from natural causes and are inevitable. However, there are situations which can be addressed through policy and decision-making. So who else does this kind of spending? This isn't the first research and restoration endowment thought of. And within Alaska, there are several endowment-funded organizations or programs, each with extensive involvement by state agencies, directors, staff, and scientists. Endowment-based funding has enabled these organizations to undertake high-quality, long-term interdisciplinary research programs necessary to advance their respective missions. Two I will present to you tonight are the Pacific Salmon Commission's Northern Boundary and Transboundary Rivers Restoration and Enhancement Fund, which emerged from the 1999 amendment to the Pacific Salmon Treaty and is administered by a bilateral restoration and enhancement fund committees. Congress capitalized the Northern Fund at $75 million to support activities in the U.S. and Canada that develop improved information for resource management, rehabilitate and restore marine and freshwater habitat, and enhance wild stock productions through low technology techniques. The other program is the North Pacific Research Board. It was established as a result of a dispute over distribution of revenues from outer continental shelf leasing within 3 miles of state-owned submerged lands. Congressional leaders created an endowment fund supporting this initiative or board. The fund was capitalized using one half of a U.S. Supreme Court decision, approximately totaling $1.5 billion. The North Pacific Research Board was charged with carrying out a new program of marine research off Alaska to build a clear understanding of the North Pacific, Bering Sea, and Arctic Ocean ecosystems that enable effective management and sustainable uses of marine resources. Under their mission, salmon does not qualify as a marine resource, which is why this endowment board would be beneficial. Other examples in Alaska of this kind of endowment fund funding include the Exxon Valdez Oil Spill Trustee Council and the Prince William Sound Oil Spill Recovery Institute. So my final points are these. Research is necessary if you need to manage resources. This is not groundbreaking action that you are considering, and we have a couple of options. We can continue to seek 1 or 2 years of funding for an issue that demands millions of dollars over several years, or you can set aside a block of money to prevent the further decline of these stocks. Now that you've been made aware by myself and the packet in front of you and the many other testifying people that will come after me here, we believe that there are serious problems lurking for Chinook salmon in Alaska, and we think it would be shameful to wait any longer to look into why these declines are occurring as opposed to what we can do now to prevent further declines. I thank you for your time tonight.
Thank you, Ms. Gillis. I have a question. Do you know of any research that's being done or anything that has been done on ocean acidification in the Bering Sea?
I don't specifically, but I do know that ocean acidification is part of the priority within the North Pacific Research Board, and I do know that their funds are designed for those kinds of specific purposes.
You don't know of any specific plans right now for a research program?
I don't.
All right. Questions from the committee for Ms. Gillis? Seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony. Also in the room we have John Starkey. John, please come forward and place yourself and your affiliation on the record, and we'll hear your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Starkey. I'm here representing the Association of Village Council Presidents, which is represents 56 villages in the Yukon Kuskokwim Delta. If you were to travel either the Yukon or the Kuskokwim in the spring, most years you would see fish camps with lots of people, kids in many generations, and you would see bright red fish hanging from the camp. And those strips are going to be Chinook. They're the first and the most dependable fish to arrive in the spring. They have lots of fat, and they arrive at a time when people can dry them. And that's the way it is on the Yukon Kuskokwim. It's the Chinook salmon are invaluable, both culturally and nutritionally, socially, and economically. And I'm sure each of you have your own experience with Chinook salmon that describe its value to your representative, the people that you represent. But in the AVCP region, they're also a very important commercial resource. People need to make money to live their subsistence way of life, and Chinook salmon were one of the most dependable and valuable commercial resources at one point in time, but that's no longer the case. The Chinook stocks on the Yukon and Kuskokwim have declined to the point where some research shows that the spawner to recruitment ratio on the Yukon is 1-to-1, meaning they're barely replacing themselves without harvest, and it's below that on the Kuskokwim in recent years. So we are facing some severe challenges with Chinook in that region where they are so important. And so I thank you for this time to talk to you about the endowment fund, which we look at as one way for the state of Alaska to fulfill its mandate under the Constitution for sustained yield and the promise of common use of the resource. The $25 million Chinook fund, we think, is a great investment. $25 million in the endowment could result in multiples of dollars in research. The endowment itself, as you'll notice, the legislation allows for charitable investment. And we think the CDQ groups out in Western Alaska will be very interested in helping donate and endow this fund. They have the interest of the Chinook too, and they do research. And by having this money and this body of money available, it will encourage investment and it will feed the endowment fund. Also, one of Alaska's main sources of federal funding for salmon research is the Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Fund. That pot of money has been growing less and less each year because of the federal budgets. But the other part about that fund is that in order to get a grant to do that research, you have to have a 33% match, 35% in Alaska. And so there's a lot of research that can't get done because there's no match. And so this endowment will allow matching funds for that. And there are many research organizations and projects which require kind of matches, or if you have some money to seed research, the North Pacific Research Board and others will come in and match and sometimes triple or more the amount of money that you've put in. So it's a great investment for the state of Alaska in terms of getting the bang for the buck. We also think that it's a great partnership with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and will really enhance their work. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game, of course, is a central part of the board and the structure of this endowment fund in many respects, but it will also allow cooperation and new thoughts, new projects, new research, innovation to come out from outside the department and enhance what they're doing, allow the department to be an essential partner in things, but also just to have other people and other organizations and fishermen and people like you represent to have a way to push the process along. We think is really good for any organization to have others working on things simultaneously and partnering, and this will really provide for that. So so we appreciate that consideration. That's really all I prepared to say, but I would like to answer a couple of questions that came up I think I could. Representative Osterman asked about would the stocks of concern be a priority. And on page 6 of the legislation, there are a set of priorities laid out. And so you do, if you're a stock of concern, you do get a priority consideration for the funding. If you've been a stock that's been declared a disaster, part of a disaster declaration, you would get a priority funding. If you're a stock where there's been significant restrictions on any kind of commercial or other fishing, you'd get special priorities. So there, it has been thought through that, you know, the stocks that are most in need would get a priority for the grant funding. And there was one other question about is there spillover? And I think the question was directed at, is this only focused on Chinook? And it is. But I would like to say that, you know, whatever is learned about Chinook, and because Chinook are in decline, and because for some reason Chinook seem to be perhaps one of the more vulnerable stocks as salmon start to decline, and we don't want to see that in Alaska, whatever is learned about Chinook will necessarily spill over and help inform all the other salmon stocks as they start to, we hope that they don't, but if they start to experience similar sorts of decline, then there'll be spillover. So thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Mr. Starkey. Questions of the committee for Mr. Starkey? Representative Miller.
Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Starkey. Appreciate your testimony this evening. Does anybody have any kind of a handle? I know that the previous testifier had indicated this is going to be a long-term study. So does anyone have any expectation of how long are we studying this before we have, you know, some level of data that we could actually act on reliably?
Through the chair, thank you, Representative Miller, for the question. I know that there's been thought about this already. There's an organization called the AYK Sustainable Salmon Initiative that Ms. Gillis was talking about. They have started to form what they call a Chinook expert panel, drawing experts from Chinook around the country and in Alaska to come together and form a research plan that will help, that will be designed to find out exactly the kind of questions that you're asking. So although I don't think that there's any specific time frame that we can point to right now when we would actually have results, people are starting to think about a research plan and restoration plan that will get us to where we can answer that question better. I do know that also that one of the most important aspects of managing stocks, including Chinook stocks, are how you set the escapement goals. And I know that there's been some work done in the last 3 or 4 years through the Sustainable Salmon Initiative that has taken a look at how escapement goals are set and has, you know, and that, and is advancing the ball in that way. So in that respect, some of the work that's been done 3 or 4 years ago is already informing and helping management. So it's not so far out in the future that it's hypothetical. It's something that we think lead to some results.
Follow-up question, Representative Miller.
I'm a little embarrassed that I have to ask this question that I don't know. Does the king salmon exist in any other part of the world, and is there history, is there research, is there other declines or increases perhaps somewhere else that can also lend itself to this puzzle we're trying to solve?
Again, Representative Miller, my understanding is that this Chinook expert panel that was convened, I know that they looked at all the possible all the Chinook research and material that had been accumulated for Alaska. What I don't know is whether they looked at the Chinook information that had been accumulated in other places. At one point in time, there were strong Chinook runs, it's my understanding, all the way up through California, Oregon, Washington, and Canada. It's also my understanding that almost all those runs are either endangered species or they're not strong anymore. They're in states of decline. And that they got in those states of decline at a period of time where we didn't have the same sort of science that we can conduct now. So although I'm not at all qualified to answer that question, that's the best I can do.
Further questions from the committee members or Mr. Starkey? I appreciate it very much, Mr. Starkey.
Thank you.
We'll go to the online right now. We'll go to Rose Fosdick in Nome. Rose, are you there?
Yes. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to provide some comment. My name is Rose Fosdick, and I'm the Vice President for the Natural Resources Division at COAC. COAC represents 20 communities on the coastline from St. Michael to Shishmaref, as well as communities on two islands. COAC supports passage of House Bill 332. We submitted a letter of support for the bill to our legislators. We attached a spreadsheet for the past 9 years of all species of salmon returning to the Norton Sound, Nome, Port Clarence rivers. Of course, chinook are especially abundant as a resource in North River at Unicleet. However, for the past 9 years on the North River, the chinook escapement goal has not been met in 6 of the 9 years. Chinook and other salmon in our region have not sustained healthy populations and escapements for many years. We have a number of rivers that have stocks of concern either in regards to chinook or chum salmon, and we know that subsistence fishermen are not able to harvest their supply. Chinook is a highly valued fish by region. We want to know what has happened and what is causing the returns and the decline. This fund would be dedicated to that effort, and we support the bill's passage. There are many changes happening in the Bering Sea. We don't know what impacts of increasing large vessel traffic or environmental change or development changes will impact us, but I think this fund will also help in that regard. Thank you.
Does the committee have any questions for Ms. Fosdick? Rose, thank you very much for your testimony, and if you'd pass my hello on to your son, Dale, I'd sure appreciate it.
I sure will. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Also, next online, we have Stan Zuri from Tanana. Stan, are you on the line? Hello, Stan.
Yeah, are you able to hear me?
Yes, we are. We can hear you now. Go ahead and place your name on the record and give us your affiliation, and we'll hear your testimony.
Okay. Yep. All right. My name is Stan Zule, and I'm from the village of Tanana, and I'll be speaking for the Yukon River Drainage Fisheries Association and our support for House Bill 332. I do have a bit of personal involvement in this issue also. I've been a subsistence and commercial fisherman in the Tanana area for 40 years and run two chinook monitoring projects in the area at present. The Yukon River Drainage Fisheries Association appreciates the opportunity to support House Bill 332 to establish the Alaska Chinook Research and Restoration Endowment Fund. Yukon River Chinook salmon runs have declined to disaster levels starting in 1998. With escapement goals to Canada not having been met in 2007, 2008, and 2010, and subsistence harvests are restricted quite a bit on a lot of these years. Overall, the mean run size of Chinook origin Chinook, of Canadian origin Chinook for the period 1998 to 2010 has declined 45% compared to prior 1982 to 1997 period. And possibly even more troubling, and this is why we need, you know, more studies on this and stuff. We don't really even know that much about, you know, what is a quality run, because a lot of the monitoring projects that we had ran for short periods of time, and then they would switch to another project, and that would run for a short period of time, and then it would switch over to another project, and we just don't have a lot of good data. But even more troubling is the quality and average size of king salmon has gone down quite a bit, but we don't really even know, you know, how much it's gone down. We don't know what it really should be, but obviously, you know, when we're catching, like say we use Fish Wheels for these monitoring projects in this area, and on, I think it was in 2010, we had a 10.2 pound average king salmon out of like almost 1,000 king salmon. I think we usually get about, run about and weigh in the subsistence harvest in this whole area about 1,000 king salmon a year, and in 2010 it was a 10.2 pound average. So, you know, we talk about like a 1-to-1 spawner recruitment rate. Well, when you're putting, you know, I think that year was something like a 14% of the fish were female that were running past this part of the Yukon River, and the average size, like I say, 10.2. You know, obviously, you're not going to be able to have a decent spawn recruitment, you know, rate when your quality of escapement is that poor. So, you know, but like I say, we don't even have the data really, you know, on, you know, over a long enough period of time to say that much. So anyway, so Yodfer is very much in favor of this, and I won't go on anymore, and, just thank you for your time, and as somebody who lives on the river and whose family every year is on the river at fish camp, never been a year where we've ever missed going to fish camp. I spend almost 4 months of the year, probably June 1st, October 1st, every single year on the river at a fish camp. And, you know, and I see what this is doing to people, and the fish camps are dying. People are not even opening up their fish camps anymore. Last year, the runs were, there were three main pulses that came in the Yukon last year, and the first and second were completely restricted with the fishing, which is, you know, what we need to do. Everybody's in favor of doing that in this area. We know we need to do that, but this is the point it's gotten to. Not only do we not have commercial fishing anymore on king salmon, but there's hardly any subsistence fishing anymore. There's just a little, you know, maybe one opening in between the pulses at the lowest point of the run, in between the pulses and at the beginning and end of the run. And so it's critical what's happening here. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions of Mr. Zure from the committee members? Stan, thank you very much for your testimony. We have online Scott Ruby from Anchorage Department of Community and Regional Affairs. Did you just be online for answering questions, or did you want to testify, Mr. Ruby?
No, I was online for any questions about the fiscal note.
Okay, stay online in case we come back and have any of those questions. Next online we have Fritz Johnson calling in from Dillingham. Mr. Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Fritz Johnson in Dillingham, as you said, Bristol Bay Fisherman, and I'm also the Regional Fisheries Coordinator for the Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation. BBEDC would like to express its support for this legislation. Our situation with king salmon here is probably not showing the same kind of social impacts in Western Alaska as there are in Western Alaska rivers, but we're starting to see and have seen restrictions on commercial king salmon fishing and sport fishing. Fortunately, we're blessed with a significant red salmon run here, so we have alternatives, but we do support this legislation and we would urge its passage.
Thank you. Questions of the committee members for Mr. Johnson? Thank you, Mr. Johnson, for your testimony. Next, we'll go to Joseph Faith calling in from Dillingham also. Mr. Faith?
Yes, this is Joe Faith. I'm from Dillingham. Testifying for myself, I support the bill. King Salmon helped define Alaska to the rest of the world. As already been pointed out, King Salmon are important to subsistence, which has important nourishment, economical, and cultural aspects. Last year, I did not subsistence fish for King Salmon because of my concern for the King Salmon Run. I do point out, though, that you could subsistence fish for King Salmon if you wanted. King Salmon are also important to commercial fishermen. I commercial fish and have direct marketed King Salmon for $5 a pound. Another direct marketer told me that she sold King Salmon for $10 a pound. Last year, we did not have a King Salmon fishing or season for commercial fishing. The concern for King Salmon escapement also affected our red salmon fishing because ADF&G restricted or put restrictions on our red salmon fishing to get escapement for kings. As I said, I support the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Faith. I appreciate it. Any questions from the committee for Mr. Faith? Thank you very much for your testimony. Let's move on to Tim Andrews. Mr. Andrews is calling in from Bethel. Are you there, Mr. Andrews?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and the opportunity to testify before you today. In support of House Bill 332.
Yeah,
my name is Timothy Andrew. I'm the Director of Natural Resources for ADCT, the same organization that Mr. Starkey, the previous testifier, works for. We represent a total of 56 subsistence and commercial dependent communities on the fisheries. Our region has been hit extremely hard by the declines of Chinook salmon, and it's mostly felt by the subsistence fishermen and also the commercial fishermen on the Yukon River, and it's starting to become an issue here on the Kuskokwim River. But for your information, the people in this area consume about 664 pounds of wild food per capita, and 60% of that is fish, and 80% of that is more than likely salmon. And within the most three years between 2008 and 2010, the subsistence harvest of Chinook salmon on the Yukon River fell near or below the minimum amount necessary for subsistence, which is set at about 50,000. And it also starting to appear on the Kuskokwim River, where the amount necessary for subsistence is 64,500 to 83,000. The Kuskokwim River has one of the highest amounts necessary for subsistence in the entire state of Alaska of 64,500 to 83,000. And the historical highs for subsistence harvest on the Kuskokwim River have been 103,000 in 2008 and as low as 68,000 in the year 2000. And it is likely that we have not achieved our amounts necessary for subsistence for both rivers. And in the year 2011, I believe the reports are still being formulated and will probably be released sometime soon. But like I said, the Chinook salmon declines have hit the lower Yukon commercial fishery extremely hard. It went from a high of nearly $10 million fishery in Chinook salmon alone in 1992 to $6,500 in 2011, where only a total of 108 Chinook salmon were harvested in the lower Yukon districts of Y1 and 2. The commercial permit participation in the lower river have dropped significantly from a high of 489 permits fished in District 1 in 1991 to a low of 213 in 2009. In District Y2, with a total of 263 permits participating in 1992 and 166 permits in 2009. And in District Y3, 46 in 1977 And in District Y3, they haven't had a commercial fishery for at least four or five years now. So the income that was derived from the commercial fishery on the Lower Yukon used to be at about $14,000 per permit holder, but in the years 2011, that number dropped down to $3,221. And this has significantly affected the permit holder's ability to maintain cattle, which means the boats and motors, and also net replacement, gear replacement, and this is also compounded by high gasoline prices. And the commercial utilization of the Yukon River Chinook salmon has dropped tremendously from a high of 158,018 in 1981 to, I believe it was 109 total Chinook salmon that were sold in 2011. And those figures really show and illustrate that there has been extremely a very precipitous drop in the abundance of Yukon River Chinook salmon and also its impacts on the local people. And in the year 2011, we've had subsistence restrictions on the Kuskokwim River, where there was a 10-day, a 5-day closure from the mouth of the Kuskokwim River all the way up to Aniak, and this was imposed by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to protect the low returns of Chinook salmon on the Kuskokwim. And as a result of low returns of Chinook salmon on both the Yukon and the Kuskokwim Rivers, the commercial fishermen fleet have been delayed until the first part of July, and the fishery normally starts in a good year, probably about the middle month of June, to protect the Chinook salmon that are going through the lower reaches of the Yukon and Kuskokwim Rivers. And Mr. Chairman, I can't express how important the Chinook fishery is to our constituency, the tribes of the lower Yukon and also the lower part of the Kuskokwim River. It is an extremely important fishery, fish species for both culturally and economically and socially, and we need to find out why these salmon are not returning as they historically did before. And you know, every year we've looked forward to the return of the salmon, but for the most recent year we've been just seeing the return of the subsistence and commercial restrictions. And that concludes my testimony, Mr. Chair, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Oh, thank you. Is there any questions of Mr. Andrews from the committee? Hearing none, Mr. Andrews, thank you very much for your testimony.
Your best.
Okay, that goes through our list of people that had signed up to testify. Is there anybody else in the room that would like to come forward and testify on House Bill 332? Jerry, place your name on the record and give us your affiliation, and we'll hear your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jerry McCune. I'll be testifying on behalf of the Federal District Fishery United to support the legislation. I think there's lots of research that Fish and Game could be doing, but you know, the funds have to be spread out. And over my years, I've looked at different projects, but some of those projects didn't even finish the cycle of salmon. They just don't, they can't, there's not enough money to spread around to do a lot of research in the state. So I think this would be a good approach, especially if we could add some federal funds to it, or if there's some millionaires we might be able to tap into to put some money into it, it'd be very helpful. This is very prized fish, from sport fish to subsistence to all the way around. I have one little concern in the bill on page 6, line 12. I'm not sure. Based on the number of Alaska residents dependent on the stocks, I would say that could cause some people to say their population is larger maybe than other people's population, and they should have research first. Or I was just a little concerned that could be read that way.
because somebody that's in a village that's 500 people versus 25,000 in the city is just as important to them as it is to the other person. So I'm not sure if based on the number of Alaska residents depending on the stocks is such a good thing when we're talking about research, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. McCune. Questions of Mr. McCune from the committee members? Seeing none, thank you very much, Jerry. At this time, I'd like to call up Eric Volk from the Department of Fish and Game. He's in the room. He's listed here as a scientist, so we have a science question. I keep pounding on this, Mr. Volk, ocean acidification. I know that was a big topic last year. We were hoping to see some action there. I know that Dr. Matheson, I think is his name, out of University of Alaska, had put in a request for $2.7 million to get that study done. Dr. Feely out of Washington State, they gave some pretty shocking testimony about ocean acidification, how it's worse in Arctic and colder waters, and how the pH drops down to where that the fish feed basically is what's disappearing. Do you have any information on that, or can you tell us a little bit more about what's going on and how that's working out?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You've got me a little bit outside of my expertise with ocean acidification. I'm much more of a stock assessment salmon escapement goal biologist. I am familiar with all of those efforts going on, and I know that it is a serious problem we're putting a lot of work into, but I don't have any specific information for you on ocean acidification.
Okay. Any other testimony on House Bill 332 you'd like to get?
Well, no, I don't want to give any specific testimony on the bill itself. I can certainly reflect a lot of the testimony that's already been produced. We certainly have some issues with Chinook salmon. I think it's rather interesting to look at Chinook salmon across their range down to California, because it's interesting to see, for instance, this year, that last year and this year, there are some very large forecasted runs of Sacramento Fall Chinook and Klamath River Fall Chinook. Now, those runs have been depressed a tremendous amount in years past, but it's interesting to see that some of those runs are doing well. In Southeast Alaska, we have been doing reasonably well with all of our they're relatively small producers, but we've been doing fairly well meeting our escapement goals, and they seem to be doing pretty good. I also sit on the Chinook Technical Committee for the Pacific Salmon Commission, and regarding the 25 stocks, indicator stocks, for which we have escapement goals there, we've made some improvement, going from about 40% of stocks 3 years ago that met their escapement goals up to about 80%. Now, that's all good news, but that does not necessarily remove the concerns that we have in Western Alaska and many other places that people have been talking about. In the Yukon, in the Kuskokwim, and the Unalakleet, with the exception of the Kuskokwim, both the Yukon Chinook and Subdistricts 5 and 6, Shaktulik and Unalakleet up north, are all stocks of concern. Karlik has just been named a stock of concern in the peninsula area, or on Kodiak Island, rather. And the Iokulik is not doing very well either. So there's lots of unfortunate hotspots that we have in Western Alaska that deserve attention. And as a researcher, of course, money drives that.
Yes, it does. Representative Kawasaki has a question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question. This bill deals with sort of a long-term funding source, and my question, and I don't know if you're allowed to answer this from the department's point of view, but, I mean, have we really put enough money toward the research that you need in order to come back to the legislature to say this is what's going on? I feel that I'm not on that subcommittee, but it feels like, we've urged the governor to ask for more money to study what's going on in the Yukon, but then we haven't gotten those requests from the agency. Can you just maybe address that, and then I've got a follow-up after that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kawasaki, these are complex problems, and as Ms. Gillis pointed out in her testimony, we have made some progress through the AYK Sustainable Salmon Initiative and the expert panels that they've appointed for Chinook salmon and for escapement goals. So we have made progress, but these are very complex problems. Trying to understand the origin of stocks that are captured in distant water fisheries is a very difficult issue. Just simply understanding understanding where the bottlenecks may be for survival. Are we talking about a freshwater problem? Are we talking about a nearshore marine survival problem or something going out on the out in the open ocean? And this might be, this is a connection back to ocean acidification as well, because if ocean acidification is somehow affecting some of the primary prey resources that are part of the food chain that Chinook salmon feed on, that's something we should know more about. So I don't have a direct answer for you because it's a very complex problem and there are certainly many, many unanswered questions that we still need to find out.
Follow-up question, Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And then how does the department sort of pick its priorities when it goes, when it's trying to discover species that you're concerned about? How do you figure those out? Which ones do you target first? What's the major problem? Trying to articulate the question. Where would you put your money in research tomorrow if you had $100? I mean, where would you go first? Right? Well, how do you pick those in a line and go, we need to research YK Delta first before you do.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kawasaki, those are two different questions. The first question is, now I'm a fishery scientist for Commercial Fisheries Division, and I would say that at least one of our priorities is to try to address issues that are most central to our management regime, because it is our responsibility to provide the information necessary for the management of our fisheries. We certainly also like to participate in the gathering of knowledge, which hopefully further down the road would inform some of that information we would provide to managers. Now, as to your second question, what would I do if I had $100? Well, I would take a three-pronged approach to this. And the first thing I would do is not ignore basic information. I think that sometimes we get wrapped up in complexities of problems that cause us to do long-term research projects and ignore maybe some of the fundamental information that we need to gather, such as escapement numbers, perhaps numbers of juveniles that are being produced out of these systems, which of course would give us some insight into whether or not it was a freshwater problem. So that would be the first thing I would say is don't ignore the basic information that our management staff needs to guide our management responsibilities for all these important stocks. If I were to pick a major information gap that we had right now, it would be nearshore marine research and trying to understand abundance and distribution and survival of juvenile fish in their first year of marine life. These are very expensive projects. However, I think they bring a dual benefit. Not only would they fill a knowledge gap, but they also have been shown to increase our forecasting capabilities in some instances. And I would note the Southeast Coastal Monitoring Program for pink salmon as a great example. They have been nearly spot on with a forecast based upon their trawl monitoring efforts for juvenile pink salmon over the last 14 years. And this is conducted by NOAA. And it's been a very effective program. And we've also got new information using some atmospheric and oceanographic data for Yukon Chinook to better forecast the timing of those runs. And this is a collaborative effort that was conducted by a NOAA scientist and a fish and game scientist. And it's now starting to see the light of day. So I'm a believer in that missing information gap and the collaborative efforts that fish and game might be able to do with some of our federal colleagues in conducting that research. The third thing I would say is a much greater expanded baseline for genetic studies for Chinook salmon and investments in marker development. We are hamstrung a little bit right now. Some of you are probably familiar with the difficulties we have in Western Alaska with some species and being able to identify exactly where they came from. We have similar problems with Chinook salmon. And my personal view is that genetics is very much a continuing part of the future of fisheries management, and that we should continue. I think this is a broken record for some of you guys. You probably hear a lot about invest in genetics, but it is not a frivolous investment, and we should continue to move forward with that. That's what I would do if I had $100, Representative Kawasaki.
Mr. Volk, do you get involved with monitoring the bycatch and maybe where those originated from?
Mr. Chairman, I am not directly involved with the monitoring of the bycatch. However, we did, myself and my colleagues, did play a role in trying to ensure that the bycatch in the pollock fishery was sampled in a scientifically defensible way, a census sampling, if you will, rather than we unfortunately only had information from grab samples, and so we put a plan in place for census sampling. Now, once again, getting back to genetics, one of the big questions people have about bycatch sampling, of course, is where do they come from?
Right.
And we can answer that question to a certain degree, but not to the degree that meets the satisfaction of most people, including us. We would like to have better resolution of those stocks. I recently read a paper also that there's some samples from the from a research cruise. It's not the Russian pollock fishery, but it's a research cruise that is similar to that. Many Western Alaska stocks. This is done with scale pattern analysis, not genetics, but there is 50 to 70% Western Alaska stocks in the Western Bering Sea, where Chinook, where a lot of Alaska Chinook salmon spend their summers.
Hmm. Representative Osterman has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I heard you say, and I'm from Koya Question, so I'm looking at the Iacotic and the Carbic, and I think I heard you just say that the first thing you would do with the $100 is to figure out how many, what your out-migration smolt count is, or how many fish are coming out of that river system and surviving in the freshwater. Is that correct?
Well, that would be part of it, yeah. I would include that in my basic information package. Those are often very difficult projects to run. Excuse me, through the chair, Representative Osterman. They're difficult projects to run, and as you know, we now have funding to run a smolt project on the Carlic River. And I find that an especially useful project on the Carlic because there's a lot of questions about freshwater survival in Carlic Lake.
Follow-up question, Representative Osterman.
My follow-up is more of a policy question, and I'm not sure that he'll want to answer, but I want to know what the department thinks about this bill and how they think it'll be a collaborative, or whether it is, would be a collaborative effort as far as the department is concerned.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Osterman, you're correct. I would not want to speak for the department in that regard.
Mr. Chairman, I think there's other people online. I don't know if they can or here that can answer that question.
We'll move to them. Further questions? Is it Dr. Volk? Or?
No, Mr. Volk.
Mr. Volk. Representative Herron has a question.
Mr. Volk, so earlier you said if you had $100, you would do several things. So would you take that $100 and create an endowment fund, research and restoration fund?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Herron, that is one possible solution to generating dollars off my $100.
So, Mr. Volk, is, again, with that $100, do you think it would be in the best interest of fish and game? I guess it's a dovetail to Representative Osterman's question. Is, the way I understand it, you know, Fish and Game has a huge responsibility to manage lots of things. Of course, fish is the first word in their title. Is interdisciplinary and other researches, wouldn't that be extremely beneficial to Fish and Game's constitutional mandate?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Herron, to answer your question, and you'll have to tell me if this does answer your question or not, but my colleagues and I are generally on the lookout for collaborative projects, and we often get asked to participate in interdisciplinary research efforts. Some of them I've cited here in my testimony. So the short answer is yes. There's certainly value in doing more than just a salmon-centric approach, but to look at also the ecosystem that salmon live in. I think that's probably the best answer I can give you, that yes, of course, interdisciplinary approaches are often valuable.
So, Mr. Chairman, I guess one more question is I guess that we need this. We need this endowment fund to do research for salmon.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Herron, there are many gaps in our knowledge about Chinook salmon, and I think it is a fair statement to say that addressing those gaps in a logical, organized way is going to take funding one way or the other.
Thank you.
Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe you could answer this question. One of the reason why I asked how you would prioritize what this date interest would be and where you would look for stocks that are in decline is that this creates a board that has six members residing in regional areas. And I guess my question would be whether you think those board members, were they to come together, and you don't know who they are yet, but if do you think that they would come up with the same idea of where to put money toward research as you would, or that the department and agency members would?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kawasaki, I'm afraid I don't know the answer to that question. It is there are many points of view, and it's hard for me to predict what theirs might be.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Volk, I'm going to try and ask a couple of quick questions, and I hope they're simple enough, because I just need quick answers on these, if at all possible. Do Chinook salmon live anywhere except in the North Pacific? Are they in other parts of the world at all?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Miller, their population is found all along the Pacific Rim. They are mostly concentrated between the Sacramento River and Western Alaska. The major populations in Russia are on the Kamchatka River and the Bolshaya River. Chinook salmon have been introduced into the Southern Hemisphere. There are no native salmonids in the Southern Hemisphere. They have been introduced into New Zealand and are doing quite well, and they are popular sport fishery there.
Okay. And if I may continue.
Go right ahead, Representative Miller.
Animals of that similar or same type, do they still exist in the North Atlantic anywhere? And if they did or if they don't, would there be things that we could already glean from what has happened with those stocks in the last 100 years?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Miller, there is one species of salmon in the Atlantic that we refer to as the Atlantic salmon. They are, with the exception of populations in Iceland and maybe a few other places, you'll have to forgive me on that, the populations that are on the east coast of the U.S. have largely been decimated by overfishing in the last 100 years. There are probably some significant habitat issues as well associated with those populations.
I'm going to probably mispronounce this, but do the sea lice, caligoose, and Lepidoptera, I think it is, do they feature into some of those environmental conditions that might be plaguing any species or any wild population of salmon currently?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Miller, I'm afraid the only one of those terms that I'm able to recognize right now is sea lice.
Mm-hmm.
There is concern about sea lice affecting wild salmon because of their proliferation in farms south of us in British Columbia. I'm not completely up on that literature. I know there's a fabulous debate going on about whether or not sea lice are impacting these fish, but I think it's fair to say that some wild fish that have migrated past net pens have picked up lots of sea lice.
Mm-hmm. And I asked this question earlier, and if you can take a shot at it, if not, I don't mind a bit. How long of a study would you like to do?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Miller, I'm really not prepared to put a timeline on this. I think that these sorts of efforts, there's tremendous value to continuity of effort in research. There always is, because it's always frustrating to get to the end of a 3-year study and say, okay, we're done with that, because you've barely started capturing the environmental variability that may have a huge amount to do with this problem. So while I'm not going to give you anything specific, I'll just say that I do recognize value in a long-term solution to funding.
Last question. Within your studies, within your gathering of data and so forth, do you rely at all or heavily or smallly on local knowledge of the folks who have been there looking at it for 50 or 60 years?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Miller, I started off when I came to Alaska as a research biologist in the AYK region, and one of the most challenging things that I faced when I got there was the tremendous knowledge that the native peoples and the fishermen on the river carried, and my inability to bring that into Western science in some way. I have gotten much better at that, I think, and recognizing, I think there's just tremendous value in simply listening, because the people who are on the river watching these runs all the time, even if they can't articulate it the way that I'm used to hearing it, they certainly have a lot of knowledge that I'm open to.
Would you consider that long-term study?
Representative Chairman, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for the promotion.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Any other questions of Mr. Volk? Thank you very much for your testimony. Representative Miller and the other committee members, if you want to learn about salmon, there's a great book called King of Fish by Abrams. And that book goes clear back to the early, like, 1600s in Europe, and France and Spain had huge runs. Used to be 60-pound salmon running in the Thames River. It goes to the early America on the East Coast, how they had millions of fish. And then it goes to the West Coast and the Pacific Northwest, where we still haven't learned what we had done to them back east. And it's a great book. It really gives you an insight into to the salmon fishery and how that Alaska has done a better job. It's King of Fish by Abrams.
Got it.
Like the Abrams tank?
Yeah.
Okay, we have a couple other Fish and Game members in the room. You heard some of the questions about would you like to make a policy decision about if you back this or not? If not, I see a lot of head shaking. No. We'll come
back to you on that question.
Okay, thank you very much. We'll come back now. Then, if there's anybody else online or in the room that would like to testify, please come forward. Seeing none, we'll close public testimony at this time and bring this back before the committee. Is there any further questions of the sponsor on this bill? I know there was a question earlier about a possible amendment. I don't know if we can do that on the fly or if we need to take the time.
I think we can do it on the fly.
Representative Herron.
Yes. The first one is from a question from Jerry McCoon. Is page 6. Line 12 and 13. On line 12, it starts, based on the number of Alaska residents dependent on the stocks, the suggestion from my staff is delete number of, insert dependence of, and then delete on line 13, dependent. So the new amendment would read, based on the dependence of residents on the stocks.
Is that a
conceptual amendment?
Conceptual amendment? Is there any objection to the conceptual amendment? Hearing none, it's so accepted.
And then, Mr. Chairman, from Representative Osterman, page 6, lines 15 and 19, on line 15, at the end of line 15, the word and on 19, the last word and. After and, add slash or.
Slash or in both locations.
Yes.
So amendment number 2 would change lines 15 and line 19 to add slash or after the last word in both of those lines. Is there any objection?
Sir.
Representative Kawasaki. We're working on version M of the bill.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, as we don't want to have where people can have to bid on both research and restoration, so we want to give them the option to pick and choose, pick, click, and give, yes.
Any objections to Amendment 2? Hearing none, conceptual amendment 2 is so accepted, too. Back to the full committee on the bill. Representative Miller.
I have one question on page 5, line 24. We're talking about the adoption of regulations underneath the duties of the board. Line 24, the board, which in this instance I believe refers to the Alaska Chinook Salmon Research and Restoration Endowment Fund Board, the board shall consider. I'm not sure that I know exactly what that impels someone to do. The process and structure of the North Pacific Research Board, I'd like to know just a little about the process and structure of that board. And then I'm feeling like Bill Clinton here in adopting its regulations. Its refers to which board, the North Pacific Board or the Alaska Chinook Salmon Research Board?
Representative Aaron, do you have any?
Well, I'm not a alleged legal lawyer, but maybe we could ask Karen or Sky to come up and maybe assist us.
I think I know what it wants to say. I'm hoping that that's what it ends up saying, so somebody else won't get confused later.
Ms. Gillis, you're back on the record again.
Thank you, and to address Representative Miller's question.
Thank you.
The easy one first. Line 22, subsection 4, to adopt regulations following under line 25, its regulations will be the endowment board.
Okay.
Does that answer your question, Rep. Miller?
Subsection B4 is referring strictly to the endowment board.
Okay.
In adopting its own regulations.
Okay. Got that. All right. I'm okay with that one. And then shall consider. That means what? What weight does that carry? Or is that standard language? I don't know.
Sure. Representative Osterman.
It's not standard language. I mean, it can be anything you want it to be. It could be may. It could be shall. By putting shall in there, the board shall consider whatever the North Pacific Research Board did in adopting its regulations. So I don't know whether the intent is to force them into just the North Pacific Research Board or if there's other options that we're looking at.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
Representative Heron on that?
To my colleague is that it's kind of like someone said that you shall consider running for the legislature. I think that's what they're saying is they're requiring them to at least consider it, but they don't have to adopt.
That's what I got.
Yeah. So unless somebody said you shall run.
And do we know what the structure and the process of the North Pacific Research Board is? Is that laid out somewhere?
Yeah. Ms. Gillis, can you answer that question for Representative Miller?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In general terms, the North Pacific Research Board is structured with a board itself, a scientific technical committee that makes recommendations to the board. However, proposals are sought, received by NPRB, and they go through an independent peer review process. There's an independent peer review database that includes researchers from around the world, and those proposals are matched up with the expertise of the individuals in the database. They require at least, I believe it's 3 independent peer reviews for each proposal. Those reviews come back to the science board. Those science board members review the independent peer review and make priorities and recommendations to the endowment board itself. The structure has been deemed of great scientific integrity. The way that the North Pacific Research Board has conducted themselves has, I think, received quite a lot of applause and recognition for their transparency and broad use of science experts, not specific to any one area, such as Alaska or...
Okay. And I assume, Mr. Chairman, I assume that their structure is written out someplace.
Through the chair, it most certainly is.
Okay. I'm satisfied then. Thank you very much.
Representative Kawasaki, you had no question? I thought you... Okay. Further discussion by the committee? Thank you, Ms. Gillis. Pardon?
I have further discussion.
Okay. We're back to the committee for further discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is for the sponsor of the bill, and I might have missed this because we were next door at the same time, but is there a reason why we're talking about an endowment fund, and then can you tell me the process of whether the endowment fund would be held within the state, if there's a tax issue with why it's done that way?
Well, it's the legislature, of course, the governor would have to sign it, but is that it would be an endowment fund within the Department of Revenue. And the board would be in the Department of Commerce, but essentially the legislature would annually, or could consider annually, appropriating out of the earnings from that fund. So, I mean, yeah, it'd be our shop.
And there'd be different groups that would be donating to that endowment fund, also fish processing companies, different villages with their chairs and things like that. So it could grow substantially.
There, Mr. Chairman, there wasn't any testimony specifically to that, but you do raise a good point, is that if the legislature decides and the governor approves about the principal that would go on to the fund, is obviously it will... we believe, will attract significant match money, knowing that that money stays in a principal and is never, you never raid the principal. You can only use the earnings. So it's a very attractive fund to match up with by some, we believe.
Further discussion by the committee?
Are we going to move it out?
Pardon?
Are we going to move it out?
Yeah.
Question. Just put a comment on, Mr. Chairman. You know, I actually, let's see, I don't not like this bill. I guess that would be the way I would put it. I like the idea and I like the concept of research. And Bob and Steve and I have sat in on the Yukon River Drainage Fisheries Association teleconference that are weekly during the summer, and they go through and they talk about the fish. They are basically, they're sitting over there with a cell phone telling us what's going on, what the fish look like, whether they're silvery or not silvery. And we've gone over this for the last few years at each of these different stations. And so I know that there is a great deal of consternation with the amount of research that's done, because that, I think it was that same year that they did the counts and they said, oh yeah, there's lots of king salmon coming through here, but we're not allowed to catch any of them, so they weren't catching them. They found out that one of the counters at the mouth of the river was bad. So I know that there's a lot of research that goes into this, and I like the idea of having some sort of a long-term strategy for funding this. The part that I've got a couple problems with is that it puts it into a board situation. The board's regionally divided. The board can decide on its priorities based on, you know, I would guess, ultimately, a lot of times they're going to be based on regional issues. I think that the Department of Fish and Game, though they don't want to say it, needs the money to do research. And I think that we ought to be able to fund the Department of Fish and Game to do the research, in some cases contract out to various organizations that are out there that are actually boots on the ground, and I think that's a good thing. But there's parts of this bill that I like. I think I like the bottom line is that we want to make sure that there's more money for research for a species that has some significant issues. So thanks, Mr. Chairman.
So, you like 99% of the dollars?
How late are we going to be here tonight?
Like that.
But quickly, I appreciate those concerns, and I think that, you know, obviously this is going to get some significant, because of the amount of money that may go into it, is that these concerns, but it is spelled out that it, you know, sure, if they're if it's the Department of Ames says it's a stock of a concern, if there's a disaster declaration, there's closed areas, significant differences in yield. I mean, we're hoping the standards are pretty high and it doesn't become just a popularity contest, obviously. That's the worst thing that could happen.
Further discussion by the committee? I think I had an objection in there for discussion purposes. I withdraw that objection. No further discussion. Representative Osterman?
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion to move HB 332, version 27, LS1350-M, as conceptually amended with individual recommendations in the attached two fiscal notes from the House Special Committee on Fisheries.
Is there any, without any objection, so moved. And stick around so we can sign this. And
conceptually amended.
Okay. We have that back if I can here. I think. I don't know if we have another meeting here or not. House Special Committees on Fisheries will not be meeting next week. The time now is 6:40 p.m., and I will so adjourn this meeting of the House Special Committee on Fisheries.